Breaking news about the Celtics paying their game day staff, and it's Kemba Walker Day on this Tuesday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go! Rainy J's back with the vengeance, back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly. Podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global, but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. All right, it's Tuesday, and we're going to start with a little bit of breaking news, at least for when we're recording this on Monday night. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined once again by Chuck McKinney of RedsArmy.com. And the breaking news is that the Boston Celtics are going to pay their game night staff for the rest of the scheduled regular season. I actually broke this news on MassLive.com. Team source indicates that the game night staff will be paid for what really is nine more games, and that includes the entertainers, the dancers, and like the JetBlue flight crew, like those people, the scorers table, the locker room attendants, ball boys, the stat people, like all of the people that the Celtics employ. And it should be noted that the TD Garden employs most of the game night staff, so the Celtics never paid those people in the first place. And so when we, like ushers and security and concession stands, the Celtics have real no, they've never paid them. And so they have no real connection to those people. Those are all TD Garden and Delaware North. So I know, Chuck, people have been talking about it, so it's a nice gesture. It's not like a ton of money. It's not like a ton of people, but the people that they do have, the part-time people that they do have, are going to get the money that they thought they had coming to them.
Yeah, I think it's a great gesture. It's something we've seen across the league now. In some instances, players have stepped up and donated money. There are other organizations, but if anything, it just gives these folks a little relief over the next 6 weeks or whatever it's going to be that money that they were counting on is going to come through. So that's super helpful. It's, to have even one, and that's a big chunk to them, but it's, to have one piece of stability amid all the chaos, it certainly helps, right?
Yeah, of course. But it's not like, I don't know, pick an arena where like the Golden State Warriors, where they own the Chase Center. They pay everybody. And so every person that works in there on a game night is paid through the Warriors. So the Warriors announcing that they're going to do that is a big thing, and it's a big commitment. The Celtics it's a nice thing. It's nice that they're doing it. I'm glad that they're doing it. But it is a little bit of a different situation. A lot of these people, I believe, have like other full-time jobs, and so they're kind of doing this as extra things. So, yeah. It's really what this does and should do is put the pressure on the Delaware North to pay the people that they pay through the course of the rest of the regular season. And because the lease deal is the Celtics get to keep, I believe the lease is the Celtics get to keep like the ticket money, but the Delaware North gets to keep the concessions money. And that comes off of what the Celtics, like the rent that the Celtics pay for the building.
Yeah. So, I mean, we most of us know that Delaware North is run by Jeremy Jacobs, who's the owner of the Bruins. And he has a notorious, history with being frugal. Yeah. But I want to say it's somewhat shifted over the last 10 years or so, at least with the Bruins. He's paid – to put, a winning team on the ice. That whole fiasco they had with the shrinking the seat size within the Garden to squeeze more people in there or to squeeze more, you know, club seats. That didn't go over too well. And I don't think they made any adjustments mid-season, right? They think they said they were going to address that after the season. That remains to be seen. So he is definitely a businessman first, but I think with all the public kind of exposure about this and accountability that's going on, I would assume that he's going to have to step up at some point and pay those people.
I would think so, but it's not guaranteed with him. So we'll see. So that's the news. You can read more about it on masslive.com/Celtics, which is where you should be going for all of your Celtics coverage, including the deep dives, in accompaniment with yesterday's podcast, the Monday podcast, the deep dive on Jason Tatum. I wrote a piece on Jason Tatum doing the deep dive, the written version. So that is also up on Mass Live. Today, we're going to talk about Kemba Walker, a little bit about Kemba and what we thought coming in and his knee and all of that stuff. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll spend the rest of the show talking about Kemba Walker.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So getting back into the time machine, going back to the summer, Chuck, let's, in the midst of all of this craziness, I remember the whole Al Horford committing to the Philadelphia 76ers and that, oh shit, moment of like, what?
Yeah.
Philly? What? And it was like a rapid succession. At least it is in my mind. I don't recall exactly the way things, the dominoes that fell, but in my recollection is like Kyrie definitely gone. Al Horford gone to Philly of all teams. And then all of a sudden Kemba Walker is interested in the Boston Celtics. So when you first heard all of this, like, what was your initial thought when you heard, oh, so we're probably going to get Kemba?
Yeah, you know, I think it did. There wasn't much time in between because I don't remember being so distraught for an extended period of time. Because as soon as I heard Walker, I thought, this makes sense. You know, it just seemed like a natural fit, right? Kind of a veteran guy, scorer, not a dominant personality. It just, you know, I think you had to have some wishful thinking to go along this route to be like, he'll fit. So while Tatum and Brown kind of elevate, Kemba seems like the right fit. And that's how I've always envisioned it. So yeah, I mean, I was excited. I didn't think that they would be this good because we all believed Horford's departure was going to really hit the defense. And it hasn't. So I'm pleasantly surprised, but I thought it was, I mean, for Ainge, it was a huge hit. Right. It was just a huge hit for him to be able to secure Kemba when, you know, you're losing Irving and then you lose Horford. And we were, you know, this fan base could have been teetering if we were running back Terry Rozier or somebody else.
Yeah, it's so funny because Rozier was supposed to be like the backup plan. And this is the funny thing. Like, I guess in a way he was because it was the sign and trade for Rozier that kind of made this work.
Yeah.
But I guess Danny Ainge owes like Michael Jordan, like an edible arrangement or something because it was Jordan that passed up that big monster deal where the Celtics were going after Justice Winslow and Jordan was enamored with Frank Kaminsky. And if it wasn't for Jordan in that moment, we'd be looking at Justice Winslow. And now who knows what Justice Winslow would be with Boston, but considering his run in Miami and now being traded to Memphis, hurt all the time, like good, but like we'd be sitting here talking about the promise of Winslow. Yeah. Jordan kind of helped Danny Ainge luck into that, because now you have Tatum, now you have Brown and all of that. And then it's Jordan that didn't want to pay Kemba Walker, that was willing to pay Terry Rozier. And at some point, if the Celtics go ahead and win a championship, they should send Jordan a ring, because he's as responsible for this championship if they win one with this team as Danny Ainge is, practically.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly, his involvement in two sequences there. It's funny how, you know, for Rozier's kind of placement among Celtics fans, it's just been a remarkable slide since whatever it was, 2017, when he was point guard for the
season.
Yeah, for that, you know, when they went to the game 7 against the Cavs. Yeah. And, you know, I think we thought, wow, he's an up-and-coming player. And then we could see he just – even if we thought, you know, there was that moment where like, okay, so if Kyrie doesn't come back, maybe Rozier is the guy. But then Rozier just – he just never fit last year. He's just proof that some guys, you know, you just can't plug and play. You just can't plug and play certain guys. He was off all last year. But I think I wanted to like him. It's just, you know, but I didn't think twice when Walker was an option. Rozier became an afterthought. And I know, I think the sequence may have been different, but I was just not brokenhearted that we were going to lose Rozier.
No.
You know, it just.
No, at that point, I was happy he was gone.
Right, we were just not thrilled with either his shot selection. He was just woefully inconsistent. But you look at how far he had come, not to turn this into the Terry Rozier podcast, but I think when he was drafted in that first round, we were like, who the hell? Yeah. Who is this kid?
Right.
You know? But he put in – and he had a couple of pretty good seasons. But, yeah, he fell out of favor quickly.
Well,
so
with Rozier – it was like I consider Rozier to be a big part of the problem in the 18-19 season. And I think what made him so great in, you know, that run to the finals is that he kind of like took that step. Like he was never trying to be too much. And when his time came, he stepped in and he wasn't willing to just kind of like lay low that next year. So luckily that didn't impact what Jordan thought of him. And I wonder what they're thinking now, but I'm glad that he did enough long enough for Jordan to think like, all right, I'm willing to take this guy and have him like whatever the $18 million they're paying him, 19, whatever. That's worth more to them than Kemba Walker at the max. Or Supermax. So I get it. You don't want to Supermax him out, but they didn't even come close. They kind of lowballed him, and now Kemba Walker said, "Well, forget it. I'm not gonna come down here and play for nothing. I want to be valued. I want people to respect me." So the Celtics came along and said, "Hey, we've suddenly got this open spot. Let's do this." And so he comes to Boston, and initially, right away, I could tell that the mood changed in the locker room, on the court, and I don't know. A lot of people thought like, hey, you know, Kyrie's not here, and maybe that had something to do with it. But I as soon as I saw Kemba Walker come in with that smile, you know, always happy on the floor, that permeates the entire team. So my first reaction to Kemba, like here on the floor, I always liked his game. I thought he was going to be pretty good. I knew that the shooting percentages were never going to be very high, because he's just not a very high percentage guy, at least from like 2-point range. I just felt like right away, breath of fresh air. It's almost like, I don't know if any guys out there, you ever grow a beard and like shave the beard, and initially you get that cool feeling on your face. You're like, ah, this is new. This is like, I feel it. This is tingly. I like this. I feel like that was the feeling amongst the Celtics.
He's just genuine, right? And it's just and it really is a 180 from Irving. Irving could bring you sky high with his play on the court. And sometimes he'd try to say the right things, but then 2 days later, he'd bring you way down low. And Kemba's just even keel, and he's just genuine. And also, if you've been watching him the last couple years, even if you didn't follow him for his first 3 or 4 years, when, like you were saying, he was really like a terrible shooter, he had some big games against the Celtics. I mean, he just, you could see how explosive he was. And you know, I have some of those performances burned in my memory, and I was like, yeah, bring some of that over here. We could use that. But I just think it's just sort of genuine, character. I'm sure we'll touch on the knee and the All-Star game fiasco, later, but you know, I just felt like you said, it was just a fresh feeling. We felt it, and it just wasn't something that we, fans kind of created. Like, you're proof. I mean, you're around them. It was manifesting within the team and the locker room. It just reinforced all the bad stuff we thought about happened last year.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the box score from almost a month ago. It was March 23rd. I think it was March 23rd. Yeah. In Charlotte, where Charlotte outscored the Celtics 35-19. That was the game where afterwards Kyrie was like, I don't know why we didn't double Kemba.
Right, right.
Kemba went off, had 36 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists. Let me look at his fourth quarter numbers in that one. I remember this game. Oh, my God. 18 points in the fourth quarter, 6 of 11, 4 of 6 from 3. That was a hell of a game. I remember that one because Terry Rozier was central in this too, where Terry Rozier, like, that was the game where Jaylen Brown was just on fire. Let me look at Jaylen Brown's numbers here. He was cooking the whole game, 10 of 13, 29 points. But all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, Terry Rozier started jacking shots. And
he played the cooler.
Yeah.
He was going to cool off Jaylen.
Yeah. It was nuts. Yep. It was really nuts. So anyway, so like that Kemba, we were like, damn, this kid can fucking fly, man. That kid is unbelievable. I can just tell you from my own personal experience, like in last season, you couldn't talk to Kyrie one-on-one. He did scrums and that's it. The only time he did one-on-one interviews was like when Jackie McMullen swooped in. I remember Jay King getting him one-on-one because he was doing a story on Kyrie's high school. And like, he had to arrange everything and tell him what the story was ahead of time. And it was like something he wanted to talk about, but no one could get Kyrie one-on-one. Kemba, you ask. Yeah, sure. No problem. Can I get Kemba today after practice? No problem. You know, he's there. He's available. At one point I had to like thank him. Because I asked, it was like some mundane story, like some little silly thing. I asked him some silly questions and he answered them thoughtfully. And I was like, it was the ball spinning story. I was asking like, why do guys spin the ball when they're taking free throws? Cause he does like crazy spinning things. So he was like really taking it seriously. Like, you know, I remember when I was in college and my coach pulled me aside and told me I spin the ball too much and, you know, it was distracting me, and he was really thoughtful. And afterwards I was like, you know what? Thanks. Thanks for like treating us like human beings, you know, because we didn't get that all the time.
Yeah.
And he's just like, so that coming in was huge. I think the play on the floor this year is typical Kemba. Like, I don't think that anything stands out about Kemba Walker's performance like this season, other than it feels like to me it's what we should have expected from Kemba Walker. I mean, his overall numbers are pretty close. He's averaging a few points less, but he's taking fewer shots. But his field goal percentage is at 42%, which isn't great, but it was at 43 last year. So it's kind of right in line. He has a couple years earlier in his career where he was below 40%, but his 3-point shooting is good. Like 37% is good. It's better than last year. It would be, I think, here the third highest of his career. So the effective field goal percentage is higher than, let's see, it's the second highest of his career. So the getting to the line, shooting from three, like that's Kemba. And he's going to struggle, I think, at the twos because he's not going to get all the fouls. And he's going to miss a lot of like layups thinking he's going to get fouled. And I think that's just the Kemba experience.
Yeah, yeah. When you look at the last 4 or 5 years, it's very, very just similar numbers across the board, all different facets, even rebounding and assists. They're all very similar. The only difference is the games played, right? The knee has obviously been a problem this year. He's 29. I'm not sure when he turns 30. You know, do we have to wonder, should we be concerned about what the last 2 years of this contract are going to be if he's starting to, you know, develop knee issues?
That's a good question. That's something that we should discuss after taking a short break. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So I think we're all happy with Kemba Walker's performance on the floor. I've said that Tatum's, leap and Jaylen Brown's leap have been kind of tied to Kemba being here. I don't think having teammates like Kemba and Gordon Hayward for that matter.
Yeah.
I think if they had teammates that were other than those two guys, I don't know that Jaylen and Jason take the jumps forward that they do. I think those guys are very willing to kind of let those players kind of be the stars and for lack of a better term, fill in the gaps. Like Gordon Hayward's going to try to make all the right plays. Kemba's just like, cool, man, you guys do you. And I wonder if part of it is an understanding of his own basketball mortality. Now, the question here, Chuck, is what the hell is going on with his knee? What is it in there? And no one will tell us.
Right, right. It's just soreness, right? Do we just get the soreness? And then there was swelling. Then the soreness turned into swelling. You know, we heard a lot about Horford's knees being sore and he was just resting. But so you think sometimes soreness just means, well, it's load management. But it wasn't until we started to hear about the swelling and then drainage and an injection, right? So when you start injecting needles into knees, then I think it elevates it to, another level of concern. Because the guy's been durable. And I know we've talked about it, right? But the whole All-Star Game fiasco kind of adds to at least our frustration,
right,
to the situation. And like I said, we've discussed how, you know, the knee could have reacted to it could have been after any game. It didn't have to just be the 30 minutes in the All-Star Game. Following game after that, it could have blown up, right? So
yeah.
It's not necessarily tied to the All-Star Game, but when you think about everything that came out of that and he says there was a minutes restriction and then he says he misspoke and, you know, all that stuff just adds to it. So we're just like, you know, we're kind of pissed off about that.
Yes,
some of us have a harder time letting it go than others.
Yeah.
Right?
I really have kind of like, I try like hell to look at it from his perspective. But I think he thought that knee felt good. And I didn't think that he felt like that was like if he thought, man, if I push this here, I might miss 5 games. I don't think he would have played, you know? But at the same time, he's caught up in that moment. Like, I really do believe that considering, if you remember the beginning of his fourth quarter, he was looking good.
Yeah.
He came out in that fourth quarter and was hitting shots. And for a second there, and I even tweeted out in that moment, he could be sneaking into the MVP conversation here. And it's the first ever Kemba Walker, Kobe Bryant MVP. And look, he's a big Kobe Bryant guy. And so if he's thinking like, I can get this MVP, if I'm hot right now, I can do this. Let's go. Let me keep going. Because if I close this thing out, there's a shot. And why wouldn't you want to be? Like, we, you and I, and people listening, don't get it. Like who gives a shit, right? But that moment with that atmosphere, with the way they were playing, it's the best basketball game he's ever going to play in. You know, that fourth quarter is the best basketball he's ever going to see. He's never going to be on the floor with that many great players again, you know, in that moment, like that. And he has a chance to win that MVP. I understand why he went for it. But anyway, I digress. So I'd love to know what's going on with Danny. And it could be something as simple as like, yeah, it's a loose body in there, like bone spurs or a chip or something like that. The type of thing that happens to a basketball player when he plays a ton of basketball. Something comes loose. It gets lodged into somewhere. It causes soreness, and you probably might not even be able to see it until you go in there and clean it out. And actually, I'm wondering if, sitting here thinking like 8 weeks to go, do you take the shot at putting an arthroscope in his knee, cleaning it out? If it's going to take like 2 weeks of recovery from the arthroscope and a couple of weeks of strengthening, can they go in there and do like some sort of knee cleaning procedure on Kemba and get whatever that thing is out of there? And in 8 weeks, he'll be kind of back to where he was before.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I think they'd have to have a sense for what it is, you know,
right.
We'd all hate for them to get in there and be like, oh, this is a little bit worse than we thought. We gotta pull out a bigger piece.
Right. Oh, and yeah, then this is a partially torn ACL.
And then he's out 12 plus a week. So,
right.
So yeah, but I was also thinking, you know, if anyone's going to benefit from 8 weeks of rest,
for sure,
it could be Kemba. But like you say, if something's irritated in there, it's not just going to go away if it's something that needs to be removed. So, you know, it's hard to predict, but maybe the extra rest could be beneficial to him. You know, I don't know. I think if he, you know, were to come back and give us, you know, a couple of playoff series of good basketball, you know, we'd all move past that. I think we'd all, you know, eventually forget about it. I mean, the season has taken on a different tone now with everything that's going on. But if this team were to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, like I think is a realistic goal at this moment, even though they were sliding a bit from the second to the third seed. You know, and Kemba plays like he's played all year. I think we will, you know, we'll forget this little, you know, all-star game situation.
Right. I mean, really it was worse when he came back. Like they got through that road trip fine. Getting him back in the minutes restriction has been a problem. But however it works out, it works out. I don't think like this is going to be the Kemba that we have. Like if this is the exact Kemba that we have in Boston for the next 2-3 years, I'm perfectly fine with that. Like there's no need for him to like do anything more or do anything less or do anything different. Like Kemba, the way he's playing is perfect for these Celtics. And let's say that the knee is a chronic thing. How bad is that for Boston, considering that Tatum has taken this leap and is presumably going to get better? Like we said, if he listens to that podcast and improves on the things that we tell him to, then he's... That kid's gonna go places.
Right.
But he's presumably gonna get better. Jaylen Brown's gonna presumably get better. Jaylen's under contract. Tatum's going to be under contract. They're gonna be here for a while. So if Kemba takes a little more of a step back. How bad is that really?
It's not, because there's plenty of buffer there, right? You know, the other guys are going to eat into that space, and he's going to concede it willingly, I think. And I think it'll be fine. And then maybe, you know, it might only be a few minutes a game at first, right? It doesn't sound drastic, but you know, if there are fewer drives to the hoop, if he's hitting the deck a fewer times a game, you know, all that stuff adds up. If there's just, it's just less of an impact for him to play those 28 to 30 minutes or whatever it is, or there are fewer games where he creeps into 35, 37. I think they can absorb that. And it's almost, you know, again, it's the timing, like the way these contracts or the ages of these guys just fall. It just really works when you have two guys who are 22, 23 rising. Naturally, the guys who's, or 29 and 30 can be scaled back. Right. It's just part of, you know, and granted, Kemba's arrival here wasn't part of Ainge's master plan, but I still think it fits. I still think it fits for, you know, the reasons we just laid out.
Yeah. And it's going to be funny. I don't know what they do with Gordon Hayward and Gordon Hayward's future, that when we get to the Gordon Hayward part of the podcast, like, there's going to be so much to talk about when it comes to his contract. But they've got Hayward and Kemba for this season at a combined, $65.5 million, which is a lot of money. And those are the guys that we're saying we're perfectly happy them taking a step back. So it's just going to be interesting to see if, you know, how people react to Kemba kind of, if he does fall behind and he does have to like exercise that player option in a couple years where he's slated to make almost $38 million. Are we going to start seeing some of the same Gordon type comments?
Of course. Yes. The answer is yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Because that's how the fans are.
Right. What are we paying him $36 million a year for?
But, you know, usually there's very few instances where you really get your money on a huge contract like that. Our team really gets the value, its value worth. But, you know, you pointed out the $60 million they're giving to those two guys. I mean, they're paying Tatum and Brown less than 15, right? Or 15. I mean, that's the biggest steal going. So it all works out.
Right.
I mean, when you look at all of the terrible contracts that are scattered throughout the league, even Hayward's number, I mean, you just can't look at that and considering his circumstances, it's just something that wasn't
right. Well, you know, people don't want to hear about it.
They don't want to hear about it, but it's not like it's a Nick Batum situation where you're like, oh man, we're giving this guy all this money and he just plain old sucks. You know, it's not a bad contract like those are.
Right.
At least to me.
Right. No, right, for sure. And so we'll see what happens in the future, but I think for Kemba, it's pretty simple. Just keep doing what you're doing, bud. Keep it up. And I think his influence on this team has been great. He's exactly the type of leader that this team needs. He's been through it. He's happy to be through it. It's very – I probably said this on the podcast a few times. It's very 2008 to me. Like, he came to Boston at the right time, much like KG came to Boston at the right time, much like Ray Allen came to Boston at the right time. They're guys – now, he's making more money than they did, but he's here at a time where it's like, I'm sick of losing, and so I'm willing to kind of do whatever it takes to win. And so that, coupled with how great he is at basketball – even if he drops off, I really don't think it's going to be significant, but we'll see. We'll see. If he suddenly can't turn corners anymore like that, we'll have to deal with that as it comes. But I still think he can keep doing what he's doing and the Celtics will be okay. So, all right. That's the Kemba Walker Show. Appreciate it. Everybody who has listened, remember to go check out our friends at Postmates. They're giving you $100 of free delivery credits with no minimum purchase if you use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. If you download the Postmates app, go to iOS or Android, whatever you use, download Postmates, use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. All of you listeners who have been sticking through this hiatus with us, man, I'm forgetting how to speak during this break. Really appreciate it. Still going to be doing the podcast. Still going to be going forward. Still going to be writing on Mass Live. So if you're looking for some diversions, we're still going to be talking basketball. We've got some ideas on how we're going to do that, but it's going to shift for sure. It's going to be a little bit different, but still going to be here for you very often, if not 5 days a week, but still going to try to pull off the 5 days a week thing. So appreciate that. Subscribe. Go ahead and give that 5-star rating and a good written review. And thank you all for listening. Now, go ahead and tell your smart device to play the latest podcast from Locked On NBA.